Thank you for joining us today at the Thai Podcast. Welcome to the show.
But I think at the end of the day, something's going to get figured out where golf will be, I guess it's a weird word to use, but golf will be romantic again.
Well said.
I don't know if it ever necessarily has been much in our lifetime. I just, you know, I watched The Greatest Game Ever Played, read old golf books when I used to read a little bit more, and it wasn't about the ad spends and the advertisements. It was about the love of the game and the feel of the game. And now it's just, you can't experience golf without being inundated with marketing, promotions, ads, somebody trying to sell something. I think we'll get back to it.
Entertaining is all we want. I guess we have an easy entry. We always do at the Thai Podcast, and that is the dirt, the first stop of the day. Jeff, what have you been drinking, eating, reading, and thinking lately?
Well, it's top of mind because I was just thinking about it. I started drinking this new, don't drink much at all, but I was at the store the other day, and I really like New Belgium Brewery, and I had to look it up. I'm looking it up because I always forget the name. Dominga Mimosa Sour. That is not my usual route I would go if I was at a pub or something getting something to drink, but it's really good. Probably just has a lot of sugar in it. I don't know, but that's been my most recent drink of choice, and it's really good.
Sounds good.
Eating's an interesting one because we have some severe allergies, dietary restrictions in our family, so generally eating is very, very boring. But my very favorite meal of all time is fondue.
Really?
Grew up, it was kind of like a tradition growing up. We would have fondue on Christmas Eve. And it's my favorite. So we're in Tennessee now, and met a new buddy, and just for fun, he makes homemade sourdough bread. And so his sourdough bread, my wife's cashew cheese, because none of the kids can have dairy.
Yeah,
those paired together, I don't think anybody else on the planet has tried that combination, but it hits the spot. It's really good.
I love that. Sourdough's just impossible to beat. And when you have a buddy who's making sourdough for you, like, come on. We're doing that.
Yeah, he'll like post on Instagram, all right, who wants sourdough pickup at 10:30 on Tuesday at Bradley Mountain downtown, and I'm the first in line. So yeah, it's really good. Let's see, what else? What am I reading? I am not a diligent reader. I'm like always on the cusp of starting a reading bender, and it just doesn't usually happen. I think social media has kind of just changed that, because I just spend a lot too much time on there, but it's also just kind of where my business and community revolves. I've started signing up for some like golf newsletters that folks send out. So the one I was reading yesterday, I think it was like from the Golf Historians Society.
Mm-hmm.
I should know. So I've tried to just do a little bit more reading in the golf space. I'm in the golf space very heavily, but it's a very big world of golf. And I've always liked, I'm a history major, so I like the history side of things. As a creative, I like more of just the artistic storytelling that can be found. So there's, you know, a few writers that I that I enjoy reading. Read a really good article yesterday from Will at the Fried Egg about Patrick Cantlay, who, I would say is maybe not everyone's favorite golfer, but he really addresses that in a fascinating, engaging way. So yeah, I didn't see myself diving into golf newsletters, but there's a lot of really cool, really cool stories and a lot of information that you can get out of them. So super random. But I need to pick up some of my books. I've got a stack, and so I'll work on that. What was the last one?
Thinking really anything that's been any sort of themes popping up in the dome, anything that's been crossing your mind lately?
I would say two interesting ones. Just interesting as far as why they've popped into my head. We were in Tennessee now. Yesterday was our 2 year anniversary, whatever you call it, of being in Tennessee. So it kind of just brought out all sorts of feels that I wasn't quite expecting. We grew up in Washington State, lived there forever, had two kids there, and then we just were ready for a big change. And so we hit the road in 21 in an RV, and no destination, no timeline, just had a few jobs that I'd booked. So we were going to chase those around and see what would happen. And we ended up in Tennessee 2 years ago. So just reflected a lot about that journey the last few days, and just finding new community here, really starting life over. We had a kid when we got here, so we have a Tennessee kid now, and just seeing where career has pivoted and changed, and just looking back on the last 2 years of the golf world, the golf industry, and how much that has changed, and how that, affects my day-to-day life, my line of work. And I don't remember the other one, but that's pretty normal because I've got ADD. So what am
There
I
you go.
thinking is always different from second to second, bounces around like a squirrel upstairs. So yeah, I think just spending, well, I guess the other one was we go back to Washington once a year, and which is not very often considering that's, where I spent 38 years. But I've really, for the first time, missed it quite a bit the last 2 weeks. I don't really know why. I miss well, we miss family and friends for sure. Miss the ocean and the mountains. Not much of that here in Middle Tennessee. But I think more so, I just want to go back and play Chambers, which was my home course. That's really the only reason, other than family, why I look forward to going back every year anyway. So, just a good linksy round of golf on one of the coolest golf properties there is.
Chambers is a course that I madly want to go play, and I look forward to that day. We'll get to that later because I do want to talk about Chambers, and that kind of it was part of your story, getting to where we are today, which is 13 years, as a essentially content creator, golf photographer, with some stuff outside of golf too, and instead of going straight back to the beginning today and working chronologically, I kind of want to do a deep dive into the golf industry. You mentioned that earlier, and it's something that Henry and I talk a lot about. There's a lot changing in the golf industry, and I want to ask you, as somebody who lives and produces a lot of this stuff on social, because the golf industry is changing so much, social media, there's a boom of new projects. There's also a lot happening in the competitive space. In the last decade, but more specifically the last 2 years, how has the marketing piece of golf changed, from your seat?
I would say the biggest change when I When I really decided to focus just on golf, because I've been full-time freelance since 2009, but I didn't really go into the golf space exclusively until 10 years later, 2019. I really wanted to do what we call coursework, so shooting golf courses, golf properties. There's a lot of guys that were doing that and being pretty successful. And I think that's how, a lot of us were seeing, getting an inside look at cool properties like Bandon, Sand Valley, even some of the more exclusive courses that, you would maybe see pop up in a Golf Digest, but you're not seeing anything on YouTube, any content creators, like Pine Valley or Cypress or something like that. I really, like many people, were drawn to the idea of doing that. And it didn't take very long to realize there's not much of a market for that at the time. Most courses don't even have a marketing department. They may farm out marketing to an agency or something like that, but most of the time they don't have any, or so they don't really see the value in like creative content. Old way of thinking, but I would say a majority of golf courses in the country still operate that way. Smaller budget, they just don't have the time, the capacity, or the money to spend on having somebody come out. That changed in a big way, I think, after COVID. I couldn't tell you, I don't know if I could pinpoint one reason why. I think just with golf growing as fast as it has, I mean, honestly, probably faster than when Tiger came into the scene. This is the fastest we've seen this game grow. And a big reason of that is content. YouTube channels and YouTube creators, and obviously TikTok and Instagram, some alternative live viewing experiences. Obviously Liv started out with YouTube. You could only watch it on YouTube. Now we saw the event last week, 2 weeks ago, that Good did. That was one of the first like of its kind of just golf content creators getting together, playing against each other. And there was like 600 and something thousand views on YouTube by the time the night was over. Those numbers are absolutely
It's crazy.
insane. It's nuts, but it shows where we're at. So now I think resorts properties are finding the value of having somebody come out that has a tremendous amount of reach and influence. And it's not a real heavy lift for them. A lot of times they're not necessarily even having to pay. They're just opening up a spot on the tee sheet and one of the lodge rooms so that guys can come out because they want to play, and they'll shoot whatever they shoot and go on their merry way. And then, a course that maybe some people knew about, now everybody knows about. And then once that happens, all the content creators want to go to the new place. We follow each other around. If somebody shoots a property, well, I haven't shot that property, I want to go shoot that property. So there's definitely a lot more money being spent in the marketing space for that. It still is very hard to get jobs because now there's so many creators wanting to do it. So I think the spend is up, the need for it is up, the amount of people that are either A, willing to do it for free for a comped trip, or guys that are wanting to get paid, but there's, 100 people willing to go do a job no matter what the pay is. So it's been, I think it will always continue to evolve and change, just as YouTube algorithms change and as Instagram changes. There's constant changes in how content is consumed. So I think the people that will find the most success and the marketing departments that will find the most success are those that can evolve quickly as things change, you know, and that's where I think a big challenge is for younger or newer, you know, guys and gals in the space is, and I would fault myself incredibly by saying I have too many eggs in one basket. My world, my community, my business revolves around Instagram. That's not sustainable long term, because Instagram could change something overnight and completely eradicate anything that I've set up as, you know, a system that I rely on for success. But the better we can adapt and evolve and change quickly, you know, I think that's where this the su success comes. And now you're seeing it play out in, you know, pro golf with LIV and PGA Tour, a lot of different alternative ways to consume professional golf, you know, whereas before it was just Sundays from 1 to 4, depending on where you are in the country, you know. It's a lot different now, and it can be overwhelming just to try and keep up with, just because of, you know, now it's like I don't even know where I can watch something, or if I can watch it, I don't know if I can stream it on, you know, YouTube TV, or if I have to have, I think that's changing a lot of things too. It's just the way that the streaming industry works is you have to have Paramount Plus and Amazon Prime and Netflix and HBO Max, all just so that you could watch what you normally would watch on, you know, having like the full cable television package. So it's interesting how all those layers affect golf and the content that we consume, that we want to consume. It's I would say it's just like a out of control zoo jailbreak. It's just every man for himself, survival of the fittest, try and keep up. And yeah, not everybody's going to be able to keep up.
Like it is in every market. Well said.
Yeah.
I'm kind of wondering, and there's no real answer to this. I mean, clearly we're at a point, a non-settling point, where things are changing so quickly, especially with the professional game, where I just remember YouTube. Like, I remember when there were individuals who were taking PGA Tour coverage and editing it so that I could watch Jon Rahm's round in 12 minutes. And I was like, okay, why would I watch golf anymore? Why would I do it if I can watch Jon Rahm's round in 12 minutes? And actually, you get a better view because you would have to watch all the coverage and still not have as good an understanding of what Jon Rahm did throughout his round. And that was when I started really thinking over the idea, and I realize there are complications here with TV contracts and all the rest, but something's got to change, and everybody has a cell phone in their hand, and people respond to quality, and I wonder what's going to end up unfolding with professional golf. I want to pivot to just the travel, really, on the professional side and the recreational side. You've been all over the place. The last decade, especially the last year, that's when I've been following you the closest. What to you are some commonalities between the best hosts in our sport right now, recreationally or competitively? In other words, like, what is golf doing right now?
I think, I mean, there's a lot of really good in golf, and you know, it's easy to, it's kind of, I explain it as, you know, if you scroll through like golf Instagram, you see a lot of great content. Then you scroll through like the comment section of golf Instagram and golf Twitter, and it's like polar opposite. You would, it's two different worlds, but it's all the same. It's all the same people. It's really interesting how, just how I think our world in general has gone down that road. How we created that world is it's hard to understand, but there really is a lot of good in golf. And I think, from the recreational side of things, there's a lot of obviously a lot of really good private golf, which generally historically has been inaccessible for 99.9% of us. It's a pipe dream to go see, a course. And you're seeing now, we'll say, Tree Farm is a good example of how to do things a little bit different. And in turn, I think they're going to see some unique success because of it. But they're a private club, but they create unique opportunities for anybody to have an opportunity to play it. If you're in tune to their Instagram or Zach Blair's, Twitter, as long as you're kind of attentive, there might be an opportunity to go play it. Sure, it'll cost, but just the fact that it's even a possibility. You think of Augusta, like Augusta is it's the premier, right, of golf. And then you see Dude Perfect out there throwing frisbees and kicking soccer balls. Like, who in the world would have ever thought that would happen? And it didn't hurt Augusta at all. It made it that much greater, and it opened it up to a whole new audience. And I think that's where you're seeing such a growth in the game, is because of the alternative thinking and the alternative approach that golf has always needed. It started in a field with shepherds and, feather stuffed leather, and we turned it into an ultra elitist, status play more than a game. And so to see now, as new courses are being built, they're routing them so that you can have a six-hole loop, and you have lit, night short courses, like, we were talking about Citrus off the record. And so to see the variety, golf doesn't need to be 18 holes and 4.5 hours. It doesn't need to be, cart only, or it doesn't need to be caddies only. There's a lot of variety, which is what it's needed, because it's at the core, it's a game. And I like tradition, I like history, I like certain parts of the game to stay the same, but things need to evolve, and there's a lot of pushback when that happens, but there's also a lot of new people that will embrace it. And a lot of it's just required as, as media changes. I don't get into heavy debates with, LIV and PGA Tour for a lot of reasons. It's kind of the world that I work in, and I respect, I respect a lot of people. So I generally keep those thoughts to conversations face to face. The one thing that I think LIV at least showed me from just a fan perspective is there is a better way to provide live golf viewing than what we're accustomed to. And, money drives just about everything. And it's not the way it should be, but that's the world that we live in. And normal broadcast golf relies so heavily on ad spend that, now it's we've become, as the viewer, the product, whereas before we were the audience. And so everything is driven by, if we need to raise the purses to compete with LIV, we need to sell more ads, have more sponsors, meet more obligations. The viewer experience goes down. I haven't watched more than maybe two LIV events, three. And, one was last year when it was YouTube. And it was like watching an action sport, because it was 4 straight hours, golf shot after golf shot after golf shot. watching the, the leaderboard, which is kind of like an F1 leaderboard, seeing, real time guys jumping up and down, and then the team scores, and very little talking head, no commercials whatsoever, no ads, just, the live branding everywhere. But I would have done a lot of things different. But if I'm wanting to watch golf, that was it. It's golf. And that's not what we are used to. So I don't, the challenge is I don't know what's going to change, because money has become such a big part of, I mean, it's always, I guess, in our era, been a big part of pro golf, but the more money that gets involved, the less the viewer experience improves. So I
It's
don't
just
know.
less,
I just
it's
don't.
just less genuine in a way.
Yeah. It feels like, even when you're watching the golf itself, it feels like an advertisement.
Yes.
It's no longer, I mean, even this, like, Super Bowl is cool and all, and we, we say that the best part of the Super Bowl is the commercials. But even the actual game itself feels like just a straight up production. It's like a huge ad campaign, and a football game broke out. And it's just, I don't know, for me, it's just changed how I view sports. And I'm thankful, because of my job, I do get to see golf as it was meant to be played, in person. I don't know what ads are playing on TV when I'm out there. I'm not hearing any corporate talking heads. I'm just watching good golf, and you just don't see that at the professional level anymore. You don't get that experience, which is why I think some of these alternative golf experiences that we're seeing on YouTube are drawing such big numbers, because A, the audience is different now. I think more people could name off YouTube golf personalities than they could pro golfers. Not necessarily a bad thing. It's just the way things change. So it's just going to be interesting to see, because things evolve so fast. I couldn't tell you what anything's going to look like in 12 months, let alone 5 years or 10 years. I just know that, like, golf as we know it from a spectating perspective on TV is just, it's going to be different than it has. I don't see how it can improve. I hope they can find a way, but we'll
It
see.
feels like we've been here in this period of change for a while, yet it still feels like the beginning, which is a strange feeling. Feels far from over, far from a settling point.
Well, yeah, you're right. It feels like, I mean, we have been here for, I mean, it's been, what, 2 years
Been 2 years.
since, like, live all that started. It feels
Right.
like it was yesterday, and it's like every day you read or hear something that makes you just that much more confused of, what's going on. I get asked a lot of questions because of my proximity to pro golf, and I don't have any better answer or more intel than the next guy. I just know that it's changing fast. It's hard to keep up, and it's I guess it's sad and discouraging, but I think at the end of the day, something's gonna get figured out, where golf will be, I guess it's a weird word to use, but golf will be romantic again.
Well said.
I don't know if it ever necessarily has been much in our lifetime. I just, I watch The Greatest Game Ever Played, read old golf books when I used to read a little bit more, and it wasn't about the ad spends and the advertisements. It was about the love of the game and the feel of the game. And now it's just, you can't experience golf without being inundated with marketing, promotions, ads, somebody trying to sell something. I think we'll get back to it. And I would say it's starting, just with the way that this new wave of golf content is coming about. Some of it I don't care much for, but I think some of it has some potential to really, really make a big shift in golf.
That's well said. I mean, the obvious answer is that when there's more, there's better and there's worse, and that's okay.
Sure.
I want to talk briefly just about creation versus consumption, because that's a theme that's been prominent in my life over the last year or so. Most likely you're gonna spend your time doing one or the other, and you are very much in the creator camp. So I want to go back to the beginning with you and talk about, how you picked up a camera for the first time, and when you remember saying, "Hey, this might be me. This might be for me." When was that? Tell me about that process.
I didn't really have much interest in shooting when I was little, but my childhood is very well documented. My parents had the old Canon AE-1 film cameras and shot thousands and thousands of photos growing up. So I was used to being around the camera. I only ever really remember one time, like asking my dad to kind of show me how to use it. Wasn't until I was in college, I got a Kodak EasyShare point and shoot. I think the memory card was 3 megabytes, maybe 4 megabytes, like tiny. And that really kind of sparked something in me that I guess probably was always there. I just didn't realize it. But at that point, everything kind of became a photo opportunity. So I'd find myself pulling over constantly while driving down the road because I saw something that I wanted to shoot. Being in the Northwest, I lived my whole life up in the mountains, and at least once a week I was out adventuring and exploring. So that kind of gave a whole new purpose to that part of my life. And then because I had shot for several years, I had a friend that was a web developer, and he started having some clients asking him for some photos. So I got hired. My very first job was shooting for a Seattle radio DJ, and he just needed some headshots for the website my friend was putting together. And I had no I'd never done portraits. I'd never done any photos of people, just mountains and forests at that point. And so I didn't know what I was doing, but he loved the photos and wanted to pay me for them. And I was like, I don't, this is 2009. I don't know what to charge. I don't know what this is worth. I was just helping my friend out. How does $100 sound? And if I were to do something like that, headshots for a, he was the number one radio DJ in Seattle. If I were to charge that now, that's several thousand dollars. And he's like, oh no, it was worth way more than that. So I think he gave me a check for $180. And the joke is, at that point, with no clients, never really even the desire to do photography full time, I decided to become a full time photographer with that $180 check. And that's really the very beginning entry point into what I do now. It was a huge risk. My wife and I were dating, weren't married yet, so it was kind of like now or never. And just that relationship with him led into shooting some pretty cool things. But it wasn't for another 10 years that I started shooting golf. I actually caddied on tour a little bit before that first check I got. And I never in a million years at that point thought I would make money taking photos, much less being a full-time golf photographer traveling, on tour inside the ropes in a completely different capacity than I was as a caddy. So it's been really interesting just to see all the dots, you know, connect really over a period of almost 20 years of getting my first camera, caddying on tour, shooting for a DJ, shot 175 weddings, shot for the Seahawks for 6 years in Seattle before we left. And yeah, it's quite the eclectic journey. Never, yeah, I still wake up every day. I worked a lot of years, jobs that I didn't like. And so now to wake up and think, this is cool. Like, it's amazing that I get to do this. How did I even get here? It's definitely an honor and a privilege. It's a lot of hard work, especially as pro golf is constantly changing. I kind of have to, you know, ride the wave the best that I can, be adaptable. And you know, there's no, nothing's guaranteed, nothing's certain. But with all the growth that we're seeing in golf, it's definitely good, job security, at least at this point.
And now a quick word from our friends at Good Walk Coffee.
Dude, I've been getting a lot of questions recently about the magical fruit.
Big blueberry?
Nope, I'm talking beans here. Coffee beans.
What do people want to know?
Where to get a steal on quality beans shipped to their doorstep? Do you have anything?
Absolutely. A company called Good Walk Coffee, based in California, roasted in North Carolina. Great beans, nice people, excellent variety.
Are they a steal though? People want value.
Oh, I got the steal for you. Use code the tie, that is THETIE, at checkout for 20% off any order.
So that puts us around $1 per day for 2 cups of quality coffee. That's below market price for quality beans. Where can I send them?
That's exactly right. Send them to goodwalkcoffee.com. Tell them the tie guy sent you. Once again, that is code the tie, THETIE, 20% off any order at goodwalkcoffee.com.
Yeah. Tell me about caddying, because that's a key differentiator between you, I would imagine, and a lot of other people in this space. Like, you've been inside the ropes in another capacity. What was that experience like for you? What did you take from that, and put it into this?
Yeah, I honestly, I would say because of that experience, I was given my first really big opportunity in shooting golf with the USGA. And yeah, again, just to think back on how that would lead to what I'm doing now is mind-boggling, especially for how long ago it was. I graduated high school in 01 with Ryan Moore, who's been on tour since 05, probably the most decorated amateur year in history. Many would say when he won, I think he won 8 or 9 events in 2004 before he turned pro. So we grew up together, really good friends. And I never played golf. I didn't know the rules of golf. I didn't understand golf. I just was his biggest fan. And so in 2003, he was playing in the US Publinks, which doesn't exist anymore. Now I think they do the US four ball instead. But he won the Publinks, I believe, in 02 and 04. So, of course, in 03, he had the most inexperienced caddy of all time on the bag. But we did make it to the round of 32 and lost to Brant Snedeker, who went on to win that tournament. Obviously had a very decorated career. And our consolation round or consolation prize, the guy that we were staying with, our host family, he was very successful construction guy on the East Coast, and he said, "Well, I know you lost, but that frees your day up tomorrow, so I'm going to take you guys to Pine Valley." I didn't know Pine Valley. I didn't know anything about it. I had no idea. But just by the look on his face, I figured it was a pretty cool opportunity. I have no proof that I was there. Wasn't allowed to take my, I had a little disposable camera with me. I couldn't take that in. didn't get a pencil or nothing. I no proof other than the memory of maybe two or three holes. So it's pretty funny to think, you know, one of the very first golf courses I ever actually saw was Pine Valley, and I haven't been back since. So the goal is to get back there actually with a camera or some clubs. Either or would be fine.
To all those listening,
yep.
That is really good. Really good.
So
that's crazy.
So that was 03, and then 06, that was I think his first full season on tour, and I just graduated college. I was mowing greens at his dad's course in Washington for $8 an hour, and he called me one day that summer and was like, hey, my brother's going to college kind of last minute, so I need somebody to fill in. Are you up for it? And I'm like, yeah, I could do that. And so his dad gave me like a 1 hour. I still remember it was in the parking lot of the maintenance facility after I got done mowing. He gave me like a 1 hour crash course on like how to be a tour caddy, because other than caddying for him in 03, I had not caddied since. Started playing golf quite a bit, so I knew the game a bit more, but not at that level. So the first event, supposed to be my only event, was the 06 Deutsche Bank at TPC Boston, which was the final year before the FedEx Cup.
Okay.
Because that was the first stop on FedEx Cup for a lot of years, 10 plus years.
I remember that.
Very first day on the range. I mean, I'm the new guy. Like, I don't know anyone. I don't know anything. I have no experience. I'm the least qualified guy out there. And we're on the range, kind of getting warmed up on Monday, practice round. Quite a few people there. And then all of a sudden, there's like a lot of people there on the range. And I just look over at one point, and Tiger is literally in the next hitting bay beside us on the range. And it was kind of at that point, I remember pretty clearly, like, whoa, that's Tiger. Now I need to decide if I'm a fan or if this is my job. And I really made that decision that day, which has pretty much been the decision since, that I get to be in close proximity with some pretty incredible people. I need to act like it's my job, while inside I can still fanboy or geek out, you know, or be excited. And so that week ended up being pretty wild. We were in the second to the final group on Sunday. I think we went into Sunday and tied for third or fourth place. I don't remember. Group behind us was Tiger and Vijay. Vijay started Sunday 7 shots ahead of Tiger. Tiger came back and beat Vijay, and we're the group ahead of them the whole entire day. I'd never seen that many people in my life. I'd never experienced that kind of energy. Anytime Ryan hit a good shot, it was epic. Anytime he didn't hit a good shot, you could feel, I mean, I've never experienced that. We didn't play great. I think we ended up ninth, T9. But on the 18th hole, as Tiger is in the fairway waiting to wrap up one of the greatest comebacks in a single round in history, we're on the green, and Ryan makes like a 32-foot eagle putt. And that, you know, there wasn't a lot of significance on the leaderboard, but the place, I thought it was going to collapse. I've never heard a sound like that. And then to stick around for a minute off to the side to watch Tiger come in, knock in the final putt, beat Vijay. I mean, I felt like I was living a dream. And then Ryan was like, okay, you know, that went pretty well. Maybe you can do the next week while I keep, you know, kind of keep the search going for, you know, whoever's going to be my long-term caddy. I knew it wasn't going to be a long-term thing, but you know, it's kind of like, well, I hope I get to do the next one and do the next one. And so we ended up, I think, with 3 or 4 top tens in the next six months. We were in the final group. I think we're tied for the lead a couple weeks after that at the 84 Lumber, which was John Daly's tournament that is no longer, but that was quite the interesting
Where
week.
was that hosted?
Nema colon, I think it's ne Nema colon, Nema colon. It's outside of Pittsburgh, like 45
Okay.
minutes, middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania. First time I've ever had a butler. I didn't
Really?
really even know that you could have your own butler, but we stayed in the. I had it good, better than most caddies, because most caddies, they're on. It's the road grind, and their players end up having families, and they travel with their families. So caddies just kind of are off on their own. But Ryan was still single, and so I got to travel with him, and so I would stay with him, travel with him, eat with him, and so I got to stay in some of the pretty nice on-site resorts. Whereas most caddies, they're getting an Airbnb, or a lot of them, they're out grinding, so they're not making a ton of money. So you end up staying at some, pretty cheap motels wherever you can save money. So that was definitely not something I took for granted. So I'll never forget the butler showing up to our room, and I don't remember what he asked for me. And I was like, no, I don't know what. I think I actually asked him, what do I do with a butler? Because I had no idea. I was way out of my league.
Awesome.
But yeah, so we were in the final group that week, and that, I mean, we were tasting victory, and then we had a gnarly overnight storm, and they didn't do lift clean in place on Sunday, and he had a gnarly mud ball and nuked a wedge like 175. I think it hit a gap wedge, maybe a pitching wedge, but like 30 to 40 yards longer than stock over a green into water, and doubled, and that was kind of it. But that was pretty cool Sunday afternoon being in the final group. Ben Curtis won, and I think it was on ESPN that week, and so it was, I mean, not, with my upbringing to find myself on ESPN caddying on, Sunday final round, or the group ahead of Tiger, is pretty wild for sure.
Badass.
But that those experiences, that having a relationship with Ryan, being inside the ropes, eventually, as I was shooting, started leading to some golf gigs. And then 2020, the USGA was looking for somebody to shoot the USAM at Bandon. And because that year was nuts, they had flip-flopped, so the US Open was in September. And so they didn't want to send their staff all the way to Bandon from New Jersey, which is a trek. So they tried to find some local guys. So the producer got my name, because I had been to Bandon a couple times already in 2020. And he had seen some of my work. I shot the 2015 US Open at Chambers, which was my home course, just practice rounds for fun. And those photos from the practice round ended up being the portfolio that the USGA saw and hired me based off of. But also, as soon as he heard that I had been a tour caddy, it was a done deal for him, because he really was just trying to find somebody to fill the job, but also somebody that wasn't going to be an idiot, because it was nationally televised but no fans, so you had to really be stealth and know what you were doing. So that experience, all those years later, was really kind of what landed me that gig. And now this, I think this will be my sixth US Open that I'll have shot. So yeah, it's definitely wild to see how all of that has connected over the years.
I'm curious. That's a kind of funny thing, because 2020 was an interesting year with fans. Do fans help you as a photographer out on the golf course? When you're absent fans, that's got to feel super strange. It must change the dynamic. How is the dynamic different without it?
It was wild. The amateur, maybe not as much, just because it's obviously not a major championship,
Yeah.
but it's a big event. Bannon is so spread out, such a big property. I mean, you knew that broadcast was there, but it's not like sun up to sundown, the TVs are on. The amateur only gets, 3 hours of coverage
Yeah.
a day. So you knew TVs were on. I think I got in trouble at one point for driving my cart in the background of one of their shots, even though I was like 400 yards away. I was like, I didn't even know there was a camera that could see me. But a couple weeks later, being at Wingfoot, that was one of the most challenging things. A, it was the first pro golf event I was ever hired to shoot. I thought it would be easier with no fans, but it was a lot harder because if you sneeze, if you trip, if you drop something, you're the only person around.
That's
And
right.
so I really, really, I learned very quickly how to just be stealth with shooting. Thankfully, silent shutters were much improved at that point, so I could shoot silently. But I think I saw, I just, I knew it was very odd when somebody holed out for eagle from a fairway. Pretty incredible shot. I mean, if fans were there, they would have gone berserk. There was one marshal up by the green, probably 75-year-old guy. He was the only one that made a sound because he was the only one that saw it. And this was like on Saturday afternoon. There was no one around. The only people on site were all the members were the volunteer marshals. So they had the standard, tee box, fairway spotters, greens, and then the TV crew. And I think there was only 14 credentialed photographers. Typically there's, I don't know how many were at LA last year, but there's got to be well over 100 to 150 at a major. So to be one of 14 was a pretty rare and incredible experience. But just to witness a major championship in complete silence
Yes.
is something I mean, we may never see or experience anything like that again. But that there's a lot of learning curves that week. But also just, yeah, it was an incredible opportunity to be that close to, the proximity of, I could hear players, caddies, dialogue. I remember, I think it was Kuchar, one of the practice rounds. He was walking off of a green headed to a tee, and he looks at me and he goes, "Man, it's nice not having fans around." I was like, I'm sure for some, that
That's
you just want to play golf in the silence. It's great. If you're somebody that likes the energy, that would be a major disadvantage. I mean, it was eerily quiet, knowing, you're hitting a shot and there's maybe four people that are watching you, plus millions of people that are watching on the cameras. Yeah, it was very unique, cool experience. Probably wouldn't want to do that again, but
strange for everybody. I mean, from every seat, from your seat, from the volunteers, the members, and I'm sure pros have a wide variety of views on it, or did. Like, I could see how Kuchar thinks that, but I could also see how somebody else would say, "No, man, this is major season. We get four of these. I want the
yeah.
adrenaline and the energy. That's part of what makes it special." And I get all that. What about Solheim? I mean, I'm really interested to hear about that. I didn't watch much of it, but your stuff there was great. What was that event like for you?
So that was my first. I had done several USGA women's events, a couple of the women's opens, women's AM, maybe a women's four ball. That was the first event that I was hired by the LPGA. which really came from I wasn't expecting it, but I started shooting a lot of super slow-mo stuff last at LACC last year, and then quite a bit at Pebble, and I guess there it just like struck a nerve on Golf Instagram.
It's pretty.
It looks cool. I had done some a couple years before with a different camera, but the quality wasn't super great, so I hadn't really tried it for a while. And then they came out with a new version, and the footage was, yeah, it blew me away. It was unbelievable. The very first one that I posted that kind of took off was it was Rory. I think it was like hitting a tee shot and then hitting out of the rough. And it just started getting shared quite a bit. I was like, oh, this could be interesting. Then at the Women's Open, I had one of Nelly's shots hit 1 million after a few days. And up to that point, besides the Rory one, I don't think I had more than one over maybe 20,000 views. So that was like a whole different world of Instagram that I had never been a part of. And it ended up leading to, got the attention of LPGA and a few others. So they brought me out to Spain, and that was pretty cool, 'cause I've not been to a Ryder Cup or any kind of team, Walker Cup, anything like that. And it's a very unique experience because you only have 12 golfers per side, and they go out like normal in tee times. So at most you're going to have, I think it's usually three groups, four groups, no more than eight golfers, I think, at a time on the course. So you have like one real condensed area of a couple holes, and then the whole rest of the golf course is just completely empty, which is really strange. It's beautiful. It's right on the Mediterranean. I didn't know you could see Africa from there, so that was kind of, I hadn't been to Africa, so I just went down to the boardwalk the first night, realized I was looking at Africa. That was a cool moment. But the resort, very, very nice resort, kind of up in the hillside. It was not ever intended to be a walking golf course. Very, very hilly, cart path winding through it all, but there's no footpaths anywhere. I've walked a lot of golf courses. That's the hardest walk I've ever experienced in golf, and every single one of the caddies would agree. I think there's some politics that went into why I ended up there. Again, it was a beautiful setting, just not ideal for spectating. But really, really cool environment. US came out real strong, and then Europe came storming back. It was actually kind of funny because, in a way, being naive, I didn't realize that if you retained or you ended up in a tie, whoever won the most recent cup retains the cup. So as it was ending in front of me, Team Europe starts celebrating like they had won, and I'm like doing the math in my head. There's no way they won. At best, they could tie. And it wasn't until all the celebrating was done that I realized that you retain the cup. There's no playoff or anything like that. I have very strong opinions about all of that. I know they're not popular, but I feel like there should have been some kind of way to determine. I know that it's kind of the tradition of how cups are won and
Yeah,
retained.
it's a weird idea. It's like
It's,
soccer. Like
yeah.
how can you tie? What is
Yeah.
it? What is that? Why
Yeah.
go out in the field if
At
there's
least,
a
yeah.
chance of tying?
In the World Cup, you're at least going to go to penalty kicks, and you will have somebody that wins.
Right.
So now you have to wait, another
Till then,
year.
until the next one.
Yeah. So I don't know. That was very, very odd. But even in that, with the US not winning, got to see just some cool moments with Stacy, team captain, just bringing the team together, and two very different captain styles between her and Suzanne Pettersen.
Yeah.
I mean, Suzanne, obviously very, very good golfer. She's very much like the bulldog mentality of a captain, whereas Stacy's very, very calm, cool, collected. And so to see the impact that she had at the end as she huddled the team around, I was probably the closest in proximity, but I didn't hear a word, that was said. I could just, I could tell that she was a good leader, at that moment.
Yeah.
But it was pretty cool. I'll be back at the, I think it's at the Robert Trent Jones Golf Club in Virginia this September. Really hoping to see a US victory at that
Yeah.
one.
Yeah, we got swept this year, and the American teams had on the men's and women's side had kind of two different styles, and it seemed like Team Europe really went with at least on the men's side, kind of the more relaxed attitude, and clearly it paid off for Europe this year. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think you, at the Ryder Cup, you really saw, at least to me, it was the first real glimpse into just how much the LIV PGA Tour stuff shook things up, because the Ryder Cup is it's sort of like an equalizer. PGA Tour, it's every man for himself, but then you get into the team aspect, and you get personalities together, and when you have a team that clicks, whether it's football, baseball, it's whatever team has that edge, goes on to win. So in the Ryder Cup, I was very curious to see how that played out, because I think a lot of the very vocal guys maybe were on the European side, but then you also had a lot of very strong, excuse me, very strong personalities on the European side leave for live. So yeah, it was interesting. I really wanted to shoot it. I didn't get the opportunity. And a good friend of mine shot it, and he told me at the end, he's like, honestly, you didn't miss much. We were actually getting heckled as photographers as much as the players were, which, like, it's all fun and games, but it got really old. And then just the fact that we were getting our faces kicked in, it just wasn't fun.
Hey, at least you're in Italy, though,
I know. It's like, yeah, and Italy, sunny out. I'm like, it wasn't that, I mean, it wasn't that bad. Better than sitting at
It
home.
was such a weird Ryder Cup. I didn't know what to make of it. I haven't really shared my thoughts on the matter, and I feel the same way throughout this entire year. It's like we've been keeping our eyes on it, but every day, every week, something changes. And then you hear stuff from kind of inside the grapevine about I'm talking more US team than Europe here. I just can't make sense of it all. I don't know. I don't even know what happened over the Ryder Cup. So I'm not going to speak on it. But I hope they get
Yeah,
it figured out.
I
That's what I
know.
hope.
They gotta figure something out. And I was talking to somebody today too, just how I think I used the term dumpster fire that the West Coast swing was, not
Oh,
necessarily
yeah.
by like anybody's fault. It was just like a comedy of errors with horrible weather in Palm Springs of all places, Pebble being cut short,
I
waste
think the
management.
same. I think the same storm that
Oh, it just kept following him.
no, the same storm that ripped down the TGL, the
Oh,
massive
dude.
dome. It just circled around the Earth until it hit the West Coast, USA, for the
That's
PGA
so
Tour.
true. So true. Yeah, I
They've
mean, it
had some
just,
bad luck.
it was, yeah. And then, yeah, you got waste management, which that's a whole nother. I'm very outspoken on my opinions on that one. But then, like Tiger's return. And then for him to withdraw and Spieth, like, I think he was sick too, which played a pretty big role in how the whole scorecard thing went down. It's, I don't know. It's rough,
Eerie vibes. It's
rough. Yeah.
not good.
Rough time. I shot some tour stuff in 21. Those were actually some of the gigs that I had booked when we left in the RV. But I actually haven't shot for the tour since until next week. I'll be at the formerly the Honda, now the Cognizant. I can't keep track of all the
The
title
sponsor
sponsor
changes.
changes, but it's going to continue happening. So it'll be interesting. Yeah, be interesting.
It'd be good to have everybody in Florida. I like the Florida swing. A lot of hard golf holes, and pros
Yeah.
like hard golf holes. Pivoting here to a little bit of we've talked a little bit about the process and the journey, and I just want to get into more so the logistics of what you do. I know that being a photographer is really sexy when you look at it. You look at your profile on Instagram, and you go look at your website and all the work you've done. It's great stuff. But beneath that, I realize that there's a lot of logistics and horror stories at times about, shoots that didn't go the way you want them to, or traveling. All of those sorts of things, and I'm sure you have quite a few of those. Do you mind taking us through, your mindset of like, this is my profession. Yes, the outcome should be really attractive, but here's kind of what goes into that. Do you mind taking us through that sort of thing?
Yeah, it's very colorful on the back end. Maybe from what I've gathered over the years, a little bit more so than the average guy doing what I do. Especially in I'm sort of in a niche of shooting, a lot of the social content for the pro circuits. There's not a lot of us that do that. There's a lot of guys that shoot, obviously NBC has a huge crew and CBS has a huge crew, and you got Getty, Associated Press, but the social teams, because it's kind of a newer, platform of sharing professional golf, pretty small teams. A lot of times it's just one person. When I was doing USGA in 2020, I was the only one. Now I have a team of there's five, six of us. So that helps. But for the most part, I would say I'm one of very few that married, has kids. And I mean, those two things alone can change the way you go about any type of work. But especially for, travel work, because for the most part, I don't really make money unless I'm on the road shooting. So I have to, or I choose to, travel a certain amount. But if I don't, travel enough, then it makes it very, very interesting at home. If I travel too much, makes it very interesting at home. So it's kind of a constant, I think the use of the word balance is a myth. I don't think there is a balance. I think it's just constant ebb and flow and evaluating, how are things going? Do I need to scale back? Do I need to, pick up extra gigs? 23 last year was by far my busiest year. I had 45 flights. I touched all 20 corners of the country, and then, went overseas for Solheim. That was a lot, but obviously it's hard on family, but we kind of have a rhythm or routine a bit for when I travel. I don't usually travel back to back, so I'll be gone for a week or maybe 9 or 10 days at most, but then I'm home for a couple weeks. So we kind of know, what works there. But the biggest challenge for me with that much travel was just the overhead on travel costs, and having like six or seven jobs booked out, flying to Spain and Bandon, not easy to get to, and then two trips to Florida in there, all on the calendar at the same time at any given moment, then it's like that's a pretty large scale operation for one, you know, one person. And so that, because I had not traveled that much before, I wasn't quite prepared for that. So a lot of logistics there, and just with scheduling in general, getting to the point where I'm now, you know, faced with like, do I shoot this job or that job? I can't do both. I have three jobs currently in the same week in April. I can only do one. So, you know, I'm trying to figure out which one is the best. Which one do I want to do? What's the best opportunity? What's the best, you know, provides the best stepping stone moving forward. So I have to kind of evaluate things like that, which is a good problem to have because, you know, most of my career, it's, I don't know when my next job, you know, is going to be. And so it's taken a long, obviously a long time to get to this point, where I'm turning work down. But that, yeah, I think just the overall, expense of doing what I do, you know, and like gear included. Even though I'm a one man business, equipment is insanely expensive, really, really expensive. So I've always kind of just been like I approach it kind of guerrilla warfare of just beg, borrow, steal, get what I can find. Because yeah, having that kind of overhead, you know, it's just expensive. A lot of guys that do what I do, they don't have five mouths to feed, or they have a gig where, you know, that gig has gear, you know, that they can use. So there's some really unique challenges in that. And to be honest, there's a lot of guys, you know, I think to myself, what am I going to be doing when I'm 60? You know, do I still want to be on the tour circuit? And you look at the guys that are, not a lot of them are still married. I know a lot of them that don't real, you know, they don't have close relationship with their kids, you know, that kind of stuff to me is, I mean, that's far more important than getting to do cool stuff that I get to post on Instagram. Like, I get to do cool stuff, but you know, there's a lot more to it than that. So, again, I'm constantly having to, you know, adjust, evaluate, you know, is this really what I want to be doing? You know, the decisions that I make now, what are they leading, you know, leading towards? This is the first year I've ever been able to, in January, look at the whole year and have a pretty good idea what it's going to look like, which is a huge, huge blessing because I've never been able to get to that point. But I think just kind of finally hitting a stride of finding, you know, what my niche is, what I like doing, getting, you know, a few really good key clients that I can count on, and then just kind of fill in the gaps. It's hard to get to that point, but if you can get to that point, it really, really helps. Never really foresaw the LPGA, you know, being one of the clients that keeps me busy. But I love it. You know, I love working with women's golf. It's really fun to watch. And everyone's very humble and appreciative to have you there. They know that you're actually bringing a lot of value to women's game and to their, you know, their personal brands. You don't get that on the men's side because there is so much coverage. They're not in any need of content. You know, there's hundreds and hundreds of photographers lined up out the door to be there to shoot stuff. So that's been a pretty cool surprise, I guess you could say, is not something that I like envisioned doing, but now that I am doing it, you know, I love it. It's been a lot of fun, and so they'll keep me pretty busy this year, and just, you know, building relationships with some of the players, and still having, you know, good relationship with caddies, because once a looper, always a looper. So those are usually the, that's who I gravitate, you know, towards whether it's men's or women's. I always, find the loopers that I know, still have a relationship with. So that's fun just to see some of those familiar faces. And rumor has it, I'm actually coming out of retirement for one day only in a couple of weeks to caddy in a thing
When
that I'll
is
tell you
that?
about
Can you
later.
say? Okay. Yeah, never mind. We'll leave it. We'll
I
leave
don't
it.
know if I can or not, so
It's
we'll just
okay.
leave it.
Hey, let's end this thing with some rapid fire. You ready?
Bring it. Yeah, bring it.
Best grub of 2023 at a golf facility.
Oh gosh. It's usually terrible.
Really? I'm glad you
Well, it's
said that.
your meat you it's media center food.
Yeah, that's right. But it can be recreational. It doesn't have to be, competitive. Like, makes sense at a PGA Tour
Okay.
event or something.
Well, it's really hard to beat the I guess the Cabot cookie on the first tee at Citrus Farms,
Haven't had them
especially
yet, but I can't wait.
if you're there in the morning and they're actually still warm, because they make them fresh every morning. The dollar tacos at Sand Valley, really hard to beat, especially with a Spotted Cow and the ice cream sandwich. Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big dessert guy, but I just went full dessert mode there. So maybe I am a
So,
big dessert guy.
what we learned is the resorts win, and of the resorts, Sand Valley takes the cake for 2023.
Dude, it's the only golf property that I know of that I've been to that you can eat like a king for under $10. I mean, there's three tacos,
Except
ice cream sandwich, and a beer for.
Augusta.
I wouldn't know.
Oh, well, during the Masters, of course. I wouldn't know
Yeah, I
outside
wouldn't
of
know.
that.
I haven't been at
Man,
all. We'll see.
I have a sneaky suspicion that that will change.
I did
But
get an invite to a practice round this year, which is the second closest I've ever gotten. First close was I got invited to shoot the 22 Masters, finally. And then the next day we found out our due date for our
No
Tennessee
way.
kid was that weekend, and he was born Saturday night of Masters weekend. So within 48 hours of finally getting invited, I had to say no.
That's a good that's a good excuse though.
Yeah.
That's very
Yeah.
good.
But I got invited to practice round this year, so I'm at least gonna do that with my son if I'm not there shooting. So this
It's a
is his year.
good gig. Augustas, they're tough cookies to crack. It's no joke. Yeah. I applied for ANWA and asked a couple questions and got laughed out of the room. So we'll keep that going.
There's a lot of laughing that happens, which welcome to golf, but few
Yeah.
not a lot of things get me riled up, but I don't like getting laughed at.
I understand that. I don't
I
either.
mean nobody does, but
Nobody
like
does.
not that I mean people that work their way there and they've earned it, that's great. But when you have somebody that's in the profession that has been around, has a good reputation, a good portfolio or list of references that, like many people that I know that get laughed at, it just because somebody is already on the inside, but they're only on the inside because somebody gave them an opportunity. It's yeah,
That's right.
I could go harden the paint on that one. Anyways, that was your rapid fire.
I'll pivot for you. We got another one. Best sunrise or sunset of 2023?
I would say sunset, Old Barnwell.
Ooh. By the way, the Old Barnwell, I'll tell the people right now, if you have not gone to watch or subscribe to Jeff's YouTube page, do it now. I watched the old Barnwell YouTube video today. The shot that you got on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 green with 6 and 7 panning out from the distance, like bonkers, like so good. That
The
was a
place is
sunrise.
The place is special. Yeah, I was there doing a feature with Golf Digest in October, and it was a family day, so they had kids out, and it was really cool. I've never experienced anything like that at a club. Usually I'm there, I shoot. You know, a lot of clubs you can get kind of the stuffy crowd. But there was a lot of members that went out of their way because they saw me out shooting. Hey, I heard you're here, something Golf Digest. Cool. Thanks for being here. Chatted it up. A lot of them still stay in touch. I've not experienced anything quite like that. Old Barnwell is just doing it different, and I'm here for it. And then everybody cleared out. I still had some shooting to do, and so I had the entire place to myself. And I've actually gotten to the point where I have a hard time choosing between shooting and playing. I think
Yeah.
most people would choose to play. I think I gravitate more towards shooting. I've discovered I love playing, but I don't, to me, creating good art, it feels like currency to me. Like that's my livelihood. So I did both, and I had half set on a shoulder with my Sony in one hand and my drone controller in the other hand. And I managed to shoot probably 60% of that flyover video while playing. I think I got six holes in before the sun went down. I don't think I hit very many good golf shots, but that's fine. Nobody cares, like, if I hit good golf shots. But I've gotten some good feedback on the video, and that's a good testament to, I didn't start putting any of those videos up, and I think until the week after Christmas. I was just bored, and I was like, okay, I'm going to start cutting some of these together. And I've been shooting the flyover videos for USGA, NBC with a couple other guys for 4 or 5 years. So I've kind of, it's a lot of work when we do those. But if I'm not doing it for network, I've just done it enough. I can do it with my eyes closed. And so I was like, well, now every time I go to a property, I'm just going to get 18 holes in. And then whenever I have time, I'll just throw them on YouTube, and it's been cool to see like that take off a bit, and so I'll put a little bit more energy into that this year, which will be fun. Sitting on a lot of videos that I think I'll probably start releasing again here in the next couple of days, so stay
Well,
tuned.
I'm looking forward to it. Travel hack that or habit that helps you out that is a godsend.
Oh, I try to go for a walk at night with no camera, like sunset, if I can. Usually I'm still on the golf course, even though I mean, I'm literally walk like 12 straight hours, but it's just a way to like transition, because I think as when you work for yourself, you're never off. And so that's at least one way for me to like just try to transition for the night, to get out of one headspace and then into just like where I can chill. Bradenton was nice. I'd never been down kind of your neck of the woods, so I went out to whatever, what's the island? I was staying on one of them.
Clearwater, St. Pete,
No, it's like a tiny little Anna
Anna
Maria.
Maria.
Yeah,
Okay.
so it was like a straight shot. So I would just go out there every night, walk on the beach, take the shoes off. A lot of old folks there, and
Lot of old
a
folks.
lot of old folks. There was one night, oh, it was such a funny video. Probably 40 super old folks kind of doing this like line dancing. And this lady, I guess she was kind of the DJ. She was also very, very old, but she was like singing too. I don't know. It was really weird, but they were just having the time of their lives. So I just stood there for probably 20 minutes, just watching like Maybe this is what I have to look forward to, and I'm actually not mad about it. But
You know,
yeah, I gotta.
anybody you can observe having a good time these days, like, do it. It's
Yeah.
great. We have a lot of old folks in Florida. I could go on and on about the stereotypes. We've got many.
Oh, man.
All
That's
right,
funny.
Jeff, last question of the day. What are you looking forward to as something that you want to do or will do this year in 2024?
So I helped start what's now a nonprofit called Restoration Club, which has really been a cool project. Lived a lot of life, had a lot of hard things happen early on that really continued, I mean, through most of my adult life. And you know, there's a lot of points where I didn't know if I was even gonna still be alive. And to end up in the golf space where I'm at, loving every second of what I do, it's kind of given me a fresh energy, I guess. And so really wanting to find a way to kind of take all that pain and give it some purpose. And just, you know, as much as, you know, guys like us are so embedded in the golf space, there's a lot of really good, but there's also a lot of messy things. Without getting into too many gnarly details, there's just a lot of things that need to go away in golf. And a lot of that is just there's not enough just safe, I guess, safe spaces for people to really be themselves. You know, I think it's like any industry, any part of culture. You know, we're all trying to, I mean, you just look at Instagram. We're all trying to create a perception of ourselves, and it's not the whole story. You know, it's not the whole story. We put up the 5% highlight reel. And so I've always tried to like humanize what I do and not like talk bad about what I do, because I get to do great stuff, but there's 95% behind the scenes that is just real life that we all, you know, we all live and experience. And so we're starting to do some pretty cool events. We just did one 2 weeks ago at Citrus Farms. There's like 16 of us from four different states, and we don't really do anything too dissimilar, you know, from a normal golf outing, but just creating an opportunity for guys to like actually, you know, connect, have real conversation, do something other than, you know, smash 16 Coors Lights a piece, you know, just to try and build true, authentic community. I think the word community gets thrown around a little too loosely. You know,
Yeah.
real community is not just a bunch of people gathered together having a good time. Real community is people that live life together. You know, it's kind of the whole human existence has been people living in communities with one another. And so just trying to create that environment, atmosphere, because there's a lot of really good people, and there's also a lot of people that are really going through gnarly stuff, and we all think that we're doing it alone. And that's probably the number one killer of man, is realizing that you think that you're alone in all of this. And you know, just with COVID, like that was probably the most catastrophic part of it, was people being isolated. You know, and I mean, suicide from you know, youth all the way up to the elderly was all-time high, and it hasn't really receded much. And it's just that isolation piece. So trying to do what we can, you know, just to encourage real community, you know, to happen. And so I think we have a couple cool events, you know, slated, and a bunch more that'll, you know, come up. We don't do anything real big, you know, not like any 3 day 50 guy things. It's more kind of the meetup, you know, smaller group piece, which I think is just, it's better for, you know, guys to get to know each other that way. And you know, it's nothing weird. We still play you know, incredible golf courses, and it just, the nightcap is usually not, you know, a bender. It's more just having some real conversation and getting to know, you know, guys in your local area, so then you can, you know, meet up and keep doing that. So excited about that. Been 2 years in and working really hard, but now that we're a nonprofit, we can, you know, bring in some funds to help us, you know, put on a lot more of these events. So super pumped on that.
With that, we'll wrap it up. Jeff, thank you so much for the time. I really enjoyed that. And
dude, yeah, good to finally
see you out
connect.
And about.